Blog Talk Radio.
This episode of the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, I talk with Rick Neighbors, candidate for Alabama Congressional District 4 seat. We will be discussing his campaign and all the headlines, both grassroots, statewide, and national. Good evening, Mr. Neighbors. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Marcus. I'm doing quite well. So Leslie Gore recorded a song in 1963, Sunshine, Lollipops, and Rainbows, and that's the way it's going.
Yeah, that's right. I want to say howdy, neighbor, and everybody from Lawrence County. They'll understand that saying. It's a famous saying from a famous man around here. When he greets you, he would always say howdy, neighbor. So, Rick, tell us about your campaign. What was it the first thing that went through your head that really pushed you when you said, I'm going to run?
Well, thank you for inviting me into your neighborhood, Marcus.
Good to have you.
My interest actually started back in 2010. See, I spent 30-some years in the apparel business, and in 1980, people who worked for a living, no skills, no training, come in, learn a job, learn it well, and work their behindies off, they could earn $10 an hour in 1980. And in 1980, that $10 an hour is the equivalent to $67,000 a year today. Back in 2010, an issue came across my desk about this company wanted to build a factory in the U.S. Needed $20 million to build a compact fluorescent light factory.
Mm-hmm.
I needed a letter from this company. I couldn't get it because I'm in rural Franklin County. I called our current congressional representative to ask him to make a phone call. He didn't make that phone call, and they built that factory a year later in the state of Ohio. My work back then indicated that we could have 400 jobs making $20 an hour. And the only thing I needed, a congressional representative, just make a phone call, and the rest of the people would have done the work. That got me interested.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that our standard of living has been declining for the last 40 years, And where people used to make $6,000 to $7,000 a year today sitting down at a sewing machine, you got college
right.
grads that can barely find a job making $50,000 a year, if that. So that told me that something mighty wrong with our how we were allocating work, what
right.
people were earning, and the systems we had in place. We were subsidizing poverty.
Right. So that goes back to part of your education platform. How would you say about the American dream and how that connects to the cost of college tuition? And what are your views on, you know, education in Alabama, in your district and in Alabama as a whole?
Well, we just went through the state, and we know that our state education system is looking at recruiting math teachers from South Korea because we cannot find those students here. What we've done with our education system, education is tied intimately into economics, into living wages. They're both tied together, along with health care.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we've got an education system that teaches to the middle of the class. And if you just draw your little curve, that
right.
means that the students who are born with a set of genes that are extra talented, they don't get the attention they need. And therefore, we don't get the innovators and the CEOs and the mathematicians that we need for progress. And the people on the lower side of the curve who are a little bit more challenged, we end up putting them in jail and building more prisons.
Right. I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off. I was just going to tell you.
Go ahead, Marcus.
No, I was just going to say that's why I like about your platform when you talk about the U.S. being the wealthiest and most advanced country in the history of the world, that there is absolutely no reason that every student seeking an education beyond high school should be able to get one. So I was glad to see that on there because we really need to do that. I mean, as the greatest country on earth, the best way to remain the greatest country on earth is to educate our youth.
And who can do that? Who is best suited to educate that child in that classroom?
It's that teacher and giving them more control over it, in my opinion. You know, I was in the union, the teachers union, for about 10 or 15 years. But you know, the teachers, we have to give them the tools they need, and we have to pay a salary that they can live on. No teacher should have to be coming out of their pockets to make the classroom work.
In Marion County, last year, a graduate student teacher in mathematics missed her test by 1 point to take a job paying $34,000 a year. This teacher went on to work for NASA, making $88,000 a year. Most of our teachers, they're professional. They're some of the best trained in the world. Most of them, many of them, have master's degrees. They need to be paid like professionals. There's nobody in Montgomery that knows the needs better than that child in a classroom than that classroom teacher.
True.
There's no one in Washington, D.C. that knows the needs of that child in that classroom better than that classroom teacher. These are professional people. We need to pay them like the professionals they are and let them do their job.
That is so true. That is so true. And it just seemed like in Alabama, all parts of Alabama, I remember when teachers got a lot of respect where people wanted to take care of the teachers. Now, the last time I remember this functioning very well and working out was during the Sigelman years. It seemed like the state had a more interest in seeing our teachers succeed. And now it's more like you're on your own, get it done. Let's bring all these private schools in, like squeezing people out. I just don't see us getting anywhere also with classrooms with 25 and 30 people. Even in college, it was tough. It was hard. I went to Alabama A&M. Sometimes it was 50 people in the class. You was lucky if you could get a word with that teacher. I mean, you got 50 people in the class. When the classroom is over with, they're going to be swarmed with at least 10 people. So I've always been in favor of smaller classrooms. And I think can reach more students.
I'm not a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But we have professional teachers, and we need to let the professionals do their job, and pay mm-hmm. them to do that job, and they will do it well.
Yes.
Now I would go on record and say the actually teachers, public classroom teachers, their pay needs to be doubled.
Right.
Then we will train our mathematicians. Then we will graduate students that will innovate and create the products that we will need for tomorrow.
Yes.
But we've got this mentality, and we have over the last 40 years, pay people cheaply. If you don't have what you need, go buy it from somewhere else. And that means, in our case in Alabama, we're going to go buy skill sets out of South Korea to put in our public classrooms. And that is just, to me, totally nuts.
That's unacceptable. That is unacceptable.
Absolutely.
Okay, tell us your ideas on with this COVID-19, and also brings other issues to the forefront, like healthcare. Could you tell us your perspective and what's on your mind about, healthcare or the Affordable Care Act? Could you tell us how your feelings toward that, healthcare and the Affordable Care Act?
Well, when you have a for-profit healthcare system, as we do, then it's not a healthcare system. It is a sick care system, because it only kicks in when you get sick. And only if you have money to pay for that care. It makes no sense for a person who cannot afford healthcare and therefore does not receive that, make sick those people who can afford the health care.
Yeah, that is true.
That is another one of those, what I call stupid stuff that we do. And we have to stop some of the stupid stuff.
Right.
It's not just about making money. If you go back to our health care system, in the Home Maintenance Organization Act of 1973, you'll see a tape by Richard Nixon. He gets a phone call. See, back then, HMOs were nonprofit organizations. Their objective was to increase health care coverage and lower the cost of health care. After his second election in 1973, he got a phone call about making that private. And there is a tape in the archives where he is told, and he states, he likes a system where it costs more, it costs people more, and they pay more and they get less service. So we passed that HMO Act in 1973, and back in 1986, we had to pass the Emergency Health Care Act, because we have moved from a health care industry to a for-profit industry, and people in these for-profit hospitals were not treating people. They were sending them to public hospitals, and they were dying in transit. So the Emergency Care Act of 1986 says, look, private hospital, you have to take this patient, you have to stabilize this patient before they are transferred. If they're an indigent person with no insurance or no money, you have to stabilize them before you transfer them. It ain't a law, and it's by the way, we will pay you to do that.
Wow. Yeah, we're dealing, I was reading an article, it was in 2018, but they were talking about more children living in poverty in Alabama in 2018 than in 2000. I wonder, how can we continue to slip back with the people of Alabama. I mean, I'm tired of being at the bottom of the list. I just want good leaders in place who care about the people, who care about the teachers, who care about the struggling person, you know, the middle class and the lower classes, not just big business, not just get all we can, run them into the ground, and then when they're finished, we just get us a new horse and keep on trucking. But I just wonder how much are we going to slip back? We should be moving forward, even if it's just a little bit and gradually. Why are we moving back here in Alabama in all, you know, education and everything else? I know the simple answer is that Republican supermajority down there in Montgomery, that's part of it. And that's why I want to encourage people to come out and support Rick Neighbors for this seat, because we need people that's going to go down there that care about other people. Being a good neighbor, when you, it's a play on your name, but being a good neighbor, just caring about what happens over there. Even though this is not my house, I care about what's happening in your house. Until we get to that point like that, we're going to be slipping this, all this stuff, every man for himself. We're in this together, but we need to put that into action when we're legislating. Could you tell us a little bit how people can get in touch with you, support you, join your team? I know everybody can go to neighborsforcongress.com / the platform, and they can get a lot of information. But tell the people how they can contact your campaign and how they can join you.
They go to that same website, neighborsforcongress.com. There's a box in the lot. Put in your phone number, your email, hit the button, and we have a great group of wonderful volunteers that will contact you. Or you can contact Lisa Ward. She's the Neighbors Helping Neighbors campaign manager. And she would be thrilled to put you to work.
Okay, y'all hear that, and make sure y'all do it. Okay, Rick, I'm going to ask you this question. Some you can answer it if you want to. What is the biggest thing? It could be several. I'm sure it is. But what is the biggest thing about your opponent that you disagree with? The first thing that pops in your mind that you totally disagree with him about, and how you would do it?
Tom Bevel was the – Robert Adholt replaced Tom Bevel as the representative of the 4th District. And Tom Bevel, if someone knows about his history – he always stood up, and he knew that he served the people of the 4th Congressional District. And there's on more than one occasion he is on record, whether it's Republican or Democrat, had an issue, and he would speak up and say, I don't know if my people in the 4th like that. I don't know if that's going to benefit my people in the 4th. And he always took positions that, if he understood them, that represented it, the people in the 4th and what was beneficial to them.
Right.
Going back to your earlier question.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to your earlier question about why are we down this trail. And it's an issue of greed. It's an issue, what is the function of government? We are, you would think that we are a government of the corporations, when in fact we should be a government of the people. Trump does not know where District 4 is. You've got two senators that are running over 67 counties, seven districts. Your congressional representative is the representative and should be representing the interests, the needs, and the benefits of those people in Washington. That difference is, I will serve the people of the 4th District.
Okay, y'all. So y'all heard it. That's how it is. So when you tell us about the voting process, mail-in ballots, what do you feel about with this COVID-19? Everybody's at risk, some more than others. How do you feel about mail-in ballots versus putting off the election?
Well, let's see. Since the Civil War, the military have been able to mail in ballots. And for 160, 70 years, it's never been a security issue. Why is it now? We determine through census, through mail-in, the makeup
right.
of the congressional districts. Why it makes that so secure and mail-in ballots insecure?
That is so true, because if they can mail you a census.
Go ahead, Marcus.
No, I was just saying they can mail you the census form and trust and know that people are doing the right thing. And like you just said, soldiers and military people have been mailing them in. The president himself, I think, mailed one in. So what's wrong with the American people mailing in ballots?
I don't see a problem with it.
Okay, because I've been hearing a lot. You know how you get these crazy stories on social media? People are really talking about how easy it would be to cheat if you were mailing in. And I'm just saying, if they've been mailing them in before, isn't that same level of risk of someone cheating the same?
That is a distraction from the fight that's in front of us. That's to make
right.
an argument for none really exist.
Right.
Right now, people are hurting. We cannot support them. We can't support our medical people. We cannot provide them with the materials they need, with the PPE they need. The volunteers for Neighbors Helping Neighbors that was calling for the campaign stopped campaigning because there was so much fear out there, and we just started calling people over 60 years old just to check on them. They needed masks. So then the folks in the Neighbors Helping Neighbors campaign started making masks, and we're still making masks that we're giving out to folks in need. We're taking them to prisons. We're taking them to medical clinics. We're taking them to nursing homes, and we're handing them out to people that need them. That is the short-term goal. The long-term goal is that we have to develop the manufacturing capacity, and this pandemic has showed our weakness in our industrial base in this nation. I can tell you right now that we're actively pursuing a plan to bring surgical mask production to the 4th District so that by the time COVID-19 returns in the fall, we will at least have some capacity to produce the products that we will need, the PPE that these medical staff will need. Now, that is what we as civilians are doing without the microphone, without a microphone in D.C. And these are people actively working, trying to solve a problem because the problem exists and we need to solve it. And we can solve it and not just talk about it.
Yes, you come from one of the districts that was heavily supported by for Adda Holt. I mean, he votes 100% with Trump, and District 4 was the highest in the country that voted for Trump. What are some of your strategies? How are you going to overcome that? We know, you know, the Trump base and Adda Holt is tapping into that by going along with anything the president wants, whether it's good for Alabama or not, or the country or not. But with such high support in District 4, what are you going to do to change some hearts and minds?
By reaching out to people like you, but talking about the things that we have in common. I sat down a few weeks ago. Let me tell you this story. I walked into a volunteer fire department, got there early. They were having a fundraiser, and I said, my name is Rick Neighbor, Democratic candidate, 4th District. I'm here to work. Put me to work. Well, they put me to work cutting fish. And the guy said, you know you're in Trump country. I said, that's okay. I'm not running against Trump. we started talking, this group, and found out that 99% of what we are concerned about, we agree on. We are creating false divisions to keep people in power, but we're not solving the needs of the people.
And see, that's what
you
just did.
Look at the facts.
Yeah, and what you did was the perfect example. Had you two never had that talk, you would have thought you had all this big disagreement that he's totally on the opposite side of the spectrum than you are. I think everybody pretty much wants the same thing. We want the best for our families. We want the best education. We want the best jobs that we can get. I think we all want the same things. It's a matter of how do we get there? When you talk about how do we get to the same thing we want, then that's where the disagreements fall apart, because I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican, black or white or whatever, you want your kids to be successful and you want to be able to pay your bills and have some type of life. Everybody, that is universal. The problem comes in is when we don't talk and everybody has an idea how it should be done. But I congratulate you and appreciate you taking that first step by going in unfriendly territory and having that discussion. Now that you did that, like you said, you found out that y'all actually agree and align on more things than what you thought before the conversation. So reaching out like you're doing is the best thing that a person can do. Now, on the grassroots level, the best thing the person running for office can do, on a grassroots level, what we can do and what I've been advocating for years is I know they got where they can restore people's voting rights, but I tell people if you can't get your voting rights restored, pick a cause, pick a candidate, and you go out, even though you can't vote yourself, you go out and you try to recruit at least three people. If everybody who cannot vote for whatever reason, go out and find three people and implore to them to vote something of your interest. Say Rick Neighbors has everything you wanted about health care, but you are a convicted felon, you can't vote no more for whatever reason. What you can do is go talk to somebody young or talk to somebody who never voted. Reach out to the people who never voted before, who, and we know who they are in the community. Some of them, some of us feel like, you know, why even get involved in the voting process? They're going to put in there whoever they want to anyway. But convicted felons, what they can do is not have that type of attitude. What they can do is go out and try to convince three other people who have not voted in the past and try to get them to the polls to vote on the issue and a candidate that you agree with. Now, Rick, let me ask you what you feel about the prisons and the inmates who are in there for life, and also some of the ones who are in there for nonviolent crimes during this time of coronavirus.
Well, I'm actually working, hoping to help a case right now. The gentleman was given life for nonviolent offense, paraplegic. He's got sores. He was down, he's in a hospital, in a prison, federal prison, without adequate health care. They moved him to Butler, North Carolina. They've got a compassionate release form waiting for a judge to sign. There's a doctor at UNA willing to provide the health care this gentleman needs, spending roughly $20,000 tax money a week for this inmate. And he will eventually probably, the expectation is, unless we can give him the care he needs, that he will not be with us long.
There's so many stories like that.
We just got to get a judge to sign a piece of paper to get him in. But it goes back to the education question I was asking more generally, and that because we have, there's some people that run faster than others. A lot of people run faster than me. I'm the tail end. And some people can jump higher than others. And some people are smarter than others. And some of us is not as smart. And this, it goes back to our public education system that has to fill the needs of all this whole spectrum. with the talent, because everybody has the talent that they can contribute. We just got to find that way to develop that in that individual. And that's where that classroom teacher comes in. But we're not doing that because we've got people in Montgomery and we have people in Washington that want to tell that classroom teacher how to do their job, and they have not a clue how to do their job.
No, they don't.
So we can get there. And instead of sending these kids to prison that are not as academically accomplished and make them productive contributors to our society, that is how we work through
Another way we can work through this through that farm bill. They just passed that hemp in Alabama. Hemp makes over 10,000 products. I mean, can't we manufacture something for nonviolent felons at the same time? I would think if somebody committed a crime, if it's nonviolent, you had no job, you may have dropped out, maybe they can get a job in counseling, career counseling and life coaching from the moment that they first do it, instead of just throwing people in prison and collecting money, because the private prison and system and, you know, the prison industrial complex of Alabama, it's dangerous. You can ask former Governor Don Siegelman about Alabama's prison system, probably along with Louisiana's. But we got to get to a point where we start. You see, that's when we have people like in jail. The first thing I would hear somebody say was, what are they doing in jail for anyway? So people have been desensitized to other people's feelings and their plights. And that's one of the biggest things as a people, not just in Alabama, that we have got to get over. We have got to have sympathy and see the other side of people who are suffering. Just because someone made a mistake, they should not be punished for the rest of their lives, especially if it was a nonviolent offense that could have been avoided. Maybe they shoplifted, maybe they stole because they couldn't get a job getting no money. That's no reason to destroy their lives. Get this person some life counseling, life coaching, put them in a job, make them pay restitution back to society, and try to help them out. Now, would you ever advocate for bringing back some of these jobs, skills, training, and education back at full force into the prisons? Or are you the type of legislator that just believes in, hey, we just lock them up until the time is done? Or do you feel in trying to rehabilitate the person?
Well, if you go look at our Alabama Constitution, it is our Constitution requires our prisons not to be punitive, but to be reformative. And that's in the Alabama Constitution. Of course, I think we've forgotten that, just in case your viewers don't know that. But there's one thing behind that. We tend to hate people we don't know. Once we get to know each other, we don't hate each other. We may disagree, but we don't hate each other. So how do I overcome? How do we? And it's not an I question. It's a we question. How do we overcome this? We neighbors having conversations with neighbors. You reaching out and having conversations with other people. Your listeners reaching out, having conversations. And you realize that we are so very, very much alike. Our desires, expectations, our hopes, our dreams.
Mm-hmm. Right. Let me ask you this, your opponent.
Start having conversations.
You can't get nothing done without that. You at least got to start the dialogue and have the conversation. I mean, but if you look at your opponent, take your opponent. Your opponent, Robert Adelholt, has a very strong record of voting against women's rights. He did not vote for the Equality Act, the Equal Pay Bill, the Violence Against Women Act, Employment Discrimination Act. He even voted against the history of women, the history of women's movement to vote and equal rights to be admitted to Smithsonian. Where do you stand on these issues as far as the Violence Against Women Act and the Equal Pay Bill, as well as the Employment Discrimination Act?
He voted against the Lilly Ledbetter Act, which is from out of Etowah County. That where And this is a case where the lady was the supervisor, found out that she held the same job as men, but after a year, she discovered that she was being paid about $7,000 less a year than her male counterparts. And she didn't think it was right, and I don't think it's right. You get paid for what you do. And how you do that, the results you get. Gender doesn't even enter into that equation. Why?
Right.
That's more of that stupid. We get more of that stupid stuff we got to stop. And it goes back to the conversations. I'm not having conversations. Why would, one, because of your gender, you think that you are better or less. Now, I know the religious histories behind that. Yes, I do. But also know this is the 21st century. And
yeah, the problem is we just got to bring people up to it. There's a lot of people in Alabama. The only way you don't get them in the 21st and 22nd centuries is to drag them in there kicking and screaming. Okay.
In the end, race and gender had no place in our civic conversations. None whatsoever. Now, do I realize that's still here? Yes, I'm not blind. But I'm saying they should be no place in our conversations, in our relationships, in our neighborhoods.
How do you find a neighborhood?
Neighborhood is just where you draw the line. Think about that.
Yeah, we don't want racism. We don't want racism.
Well, make the line different. And you got
here at the grassroots level. Rick, here at the grassroots level, we don't want racism in policies either. You know, we got to watch out for some of these policies too, because sometimes racism, it slips out every now and then in somebody's conversation. We hear about these politicians saying these, you know, blowing these bells and whistles down there in Montgomery, and every now and then they hide it real good. People who are like that, they know the spotlight is on them. They hide it real good. But some of them are just so, it's just so much into them that it just slips out. They can't help it. They just can't help it. Just like when I say racist policies, look at all the DMVs that was closed through the Black Belt. We mm-hmm. have continually seen things being done to stop the vote, slow down the vote, kick out people how to vote. These people are not attacking and doing these things out of doing a good service for the community. They're doing these things out of racism, plain and simple. They're not doing it just for fun. They're not doing this just for fun.
How do we change it?
How do we change it is voting for Rick Neighbors for Congress District 4 so he can get down there. It wouldn't be one of these, as my late friend Deborah Barnes used to say, one of these mamby-pansy politicians. Somebody that would get up there and say exactly this. We don't need racism in our conversations, in our churches. We don't need them, especially in our policies. We have a lot of times, you know, what really, let me tell you something. This is the first time I've said this to somebody, and I've talked to a whole lot of politicians, a whole lot of Democratic politicians, worked on a lot of campaigns, and I'm not the grassroots mouthpiece for nothing. But a lot of people need to realize is, some of this voter apathy that politicians are getting, they're acting like they can't understand it. You should be able to understand why African-Americans are not coming out in full force. They're not hearing you say anything. You can't be a Democrat and be scared to talk about racism. If you do that, nobody's going to support you. You're going to have a few diehard people be like, well, we got to vote with the best and whatever we got. But there is a lot of African-Americans who, why even vote? If this politician, I don't care if he's got a D or R behind his name, but he's not being vocal enough to what we see. If we're seeing a lot of racism, an extreme amount of racism, and we don't see the politician running for office addressing that issue, why should I come out and vote? Just because you're a Democrat? Nope. Just because you're a Republican? No. You're going to have to address some issues that you know are near and dear to me. And that's where it's good that you go out like you just showed up at that station and helped out. You got to show up in these neighborhoods. What's wrong also, too, that hurt us in turning out the vote is any money from these campaigns. They raise a tremendous amount of money, but then again, you got clowns like Anthony Daniels and Joe Reed who set on money and don't give it out. But none of this money never reaches the grassroots people. Some of these people on these corners in these neighborhoods, everybody know them. They're well-known, well-liked in their neighborhoods. Who's going to pay that guy's gas and times where he can go around the neighborhood, knock on doors, encourage his friends? He might could walk in, you know, places that politicians won't go, where there's a lot of people, backyard barbecue or whatever, and encourage his friends, hey, man, voting's tomorrow. Do I need to come get you what time? Money never reaches the grassroots. It always gets fumbled and spin out to people that these politicians look at like this person's, well, here's a successful black man. He went to this school. He worked on this campaign and that campaign. He can do everything very well. He can do computers. He can do speeches. He can come. He's recognized. But a lot of times these people that these politicians choose, they're not respected in the community. And then when the election's over with, they act like they don't know what happened. What happened was you did not put the money in the hands of the people who actually have a good rapport with the community. Every nice, well-dressed, talking, black, educated person, and probably me too included in some cases in certain communities, they don't carry any weight. You have got to get some people that are right there in that neighborhood who can keep the people stirred up. You can't come through this month through the neighborhood with your whole campaign running, just blanket the neighborhood, and then they don't see you no more. The little drive-by campaigning we do. These campaigns, if you want to win in Alabama, you have got to engage the African-American, let them know the issues, that you understand what troubles them, and you're going to address it. Have a plan. If you can't do that, then this is just an exercise, and just let me see what I can do. Nobody else is doing it. But I commend you for going out and just showing up, because many politicians, especially in hostile territory, many politicians won't even do that. You know, it's good to hear the other side. You may see something that you're doing wrong in that process. But like I said, getting back to this, we want to turn out the vote. And I think in this time with everything that's going on nationally and locally and with this pandemic, people spending more time with their family, they're seeing how the healthcare system is working. They're seeing how the unemployment system is working. So this is a time where people – this election is very important. It's probably going to be one of the most important elections that I know I've voted in Alabama in my lifetime, and probably a lot of other people. So we really need to turn out and give Rick the support he really needs. We need to stay engaged. We need to get these community leaders the help that they need, because they're the ones right there where the people at. They're recognizable. They're accessible. And they are, most importantly, accepted by that particular community, because you can send a guy in here, and if he don't have no good rapport with the people, they're not going to care what he's talking about. They're not going to care that he's a black guy. I mean, who cares? This guy's coming in trying to campaign for this candidate that's really not addressing my issues, and then here you come. You're really not accepted in the neighborhood. You're looking all out of place. It's a recipe for a disaster. These politicians need to get people on their team and tell them the first order when you run for office, you should be like, who are the local people? Politics are local, right? Politics are local. Get that local leader in a position where he can work for you. Just don't go out and get these people because they got a company. They can do this. They graduated this. They did this and that on their campaign. That's not going to work. That's not a winning strategy. It's just an old formula plan. Tired plan that people keep going to. We got to get people motivated at the grassroots level. Our Democratic grassroots, they're not motivated like the Alabama Republican grassroots. And we got to address that. If we don't address that, what are we doing? So Rick, what is your strategy for bringing on people? I'm not talking about no big names, the regulars that you see on these campaigns. I'm talking about, what's your plan for getting at the heart of community leaders, and what would you do to help a community leader? I just never heard a politician address that local grassroots person. I've never seen one. That's been a few of them. I've seen Parker Griffin do it. I've seen Don Siegelman do it. And I've seen a couple of Republican candidates do it. They reach down into the real grassroots, to the people they know have respect in the community.
I listen.
Oh, okay. Right.
If you think about that, it's not the leaders. It really is not the leaders. It's about the people. We are government of people. And those people that we elect, we have to listen. And
mm-hmm.
the people, that's where the neighborhoods are. The people, the neighborhoods, is why we have a government, to serve that neighborhood. And that neighborhood is where we want to draw the line. That's the strategy.
Right.
So Marcus, I see you're a compassionate individual. You care. And it's through people like you that can say, hey, we can make the world better, but we have to put one foot out there to do that.
Another with the walk beside us.
We get enough people walking side by side, and we will create that more perfect union.
True.
We do that with people in our neighborhoods.
That's one of the main things that I like about when I see politicians, like the story you gave at the beginning. I like to see politicians just show up. They don't know, well, I guess most of them do know it. It's a strategy. I really get a lot of respect when they show up at a place, like they show up at a food bank and start serving plates and stuff like that, unannounced, but hang around, talk to the people. When we do things like that, that's what people really remember. Not some big show, hey, I'm coming over to your neighborhood and we're going to barbecue and you're going to meet such and such. That's all fine and good. You know, they'll remember it. But it's good when you just show up, when the people weren't expecting you and you came. That really makes a lot.
And that's how you learn.
That is hands-on, getting right there in with the people. That is how you learn. Now I'm gonna ask you this right here, because everybody asks this right here. We're not gonna get into no big religion thing, but I just like, I'm a Church of Christ. I was baptized into the Church of Christ. I just like to ask everybody, what's their denomination? Denomination does not matter. Your religion does not matter, as long as you believe in the Creator and you have a good heart. You don't have any evil intent. But I just like to know. Because there's so many. I mean, are you Baptist, Presbyterian, Methodist?
I was accepted in the Missionary Baptist Church in the fall of 1973.
Okay. Well, I asked that question. I'm gonna take this break, and I asked that question to lead into some. I'm gonna give you some homegrown gospel from here in Lawrence County, one of your counties that you're vying for, and got a nice size population of Democratic voters. We just got to get them to the poll. We got to get more organized and make sure everybody show up, because we got numbers to win and put up a good fight if we show up. So I want to tell everybody, if you don't show up, you cannot complain. And after this break, I'm going to ask Rick my last question, because my first question from the grassroots was about the mail-in ballots. He had told me that. So anybody that wants to know any more about Rick Neighbors and his campaign, you can go to his campaign page, neighborsforcongress.com/platform, and you can get there and you can talk to him, you know, email him and see how you can join the team and how you may can help out. Now, after this, I'm going to ask Rick the last question, grassroots question, and this is about the stimulus that they're giving out. What does he see? Does he think that this is going to be continuing carrying on? And what does he think about some of the garnishments for these stimulus packages taking place? So we'll be right back after this break. I'm going to play the famous Orr Sisters from Lawrence County, Alabama, from Cortland. and I will be right back after this break. Okay, we back in this episode of the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show. I've been talking with Rick Neighbors, who's a candidate for Alabama Congressional District 4. And we have been discussing his campaign and some of the headlines, both grassroots, statewide, and national. I want to encourage everybody, like I said, to go to his website, get involved, see how you can help. We must turn out the vote. And so I'm going to take this time to give a shout-out to Kenya Rockman, author of The Child Support Hustle. It's a book. You can find it on Amazon. It's written by a military veteran who engaged the child support system and who wrote a book about the effects. And now she's on a crusade to expose the system for all the injustices there, and which we're going to get to the stimulus checks, because people who owe back child support, they most likely will have their stimulus check taken from them, as if they are immune from any effects of the COVID-19. So if you owe back child support, COVID-19, you don't have to worry about any effects from that. They don't think you should, you'd even deserve any protection like everyone else. Everything else has been put on hold, but not that, which brings us to a question of what is child support? And I hope the congressman, we talked before the show a little bit about it, and he had some familiarities with it, but a lot he didn't know. He said he would have to look at it more. But child support falls up under the Title IV-D funding, Title IV-D under the Social Security Act. So anytime a local organization, DHR, a lien in a case, say they say you have to pay $300 a month, well, that local entity is going to get $1,500 a month. They get $5 to every dollar that they collect from the person ordered to pay. One question arises most often is why should they get 5-to-1, and why should older people and people that pay Social Security, why is Social Security being used to give these people 5-to-1. So they're getting 5 times more than the actual child. You know, it's administrative costs and all that, and they get bonuses for creating more cases every year. There's even bonuses if they swear out a warrant on somebody who they consider is willfully not paying. They get like $1,800 here in Alabama. But let me give you just a few facts before we get his comment on it. About Alabama. Alabama reported $20 million in undistributed child support collected in 2018. That's $20 million that's undistributed. Then where is it? If it's not being distributed, the question is, where is it? And for every dollar spent on the child support program, the state collected $5.20 in return. There's big business and big money and big greasing of pockets in the child support system. It's one of the most unregulated, out-of-control systems, not just in Alabama, across the country, because there's so much money in it, you can't get a politician, Democrat or Republican, really, to speak out against this. I mean, this is almost a death knell if you speak out against this. This is open, blatantly greasing of the pockets, and you wouldn't want to speak out against that. You wouldn't be a team player. In 2018, $452 million was allegedly owed in current child support versus $3.6 billion in child support arrears. Alabama charges 7.5% interest on the unpaid principal balance at the end of each month. So anybody caught in child support and happens to find themselves behind for whatever reason, if you was medically injured, couldn't find a job or whatever, but each month that your total amount is not paid, not your monthly payment, but each month your total amount is not paid, Alabama hits that total amount with a 7.5 interest. Okay, if convicted of a Class A misdemeanor, the sentence is 1 year, $6,000 fine. You could go to jail, actually, in Alabama and elsewhere, too, against debtor's prison. Debtor's prison is over with. Child support is a debt. But you can be put in jail. It's the only thing that violates debtor prisons today. Okay, Alabama does not pass through child support collected on behalf of TANF and Med families. They do not pass through child support collected on behalf of TANF and Medicaid families. I only got two more here. Alabama suspends licenses if arrears is in the amount of 6 months or more. So if you owe 6 months or more, they're going to suspend your license, even though you may be working. That creates more money for the system. They suspend your license. You get a ticket going to work, maybe get fired because you got your car towed and all this kind of stuff. We do things in Alabama and other places in this system to really tear people down. And people have been labeled. Once a person is labeled that they owe child support, they go directly to the deadbeat, and that makes it easy for everybody in their consciousness to care less about these people. But they're human beings too. They are suffering from COVID-19 like anybody else. COVID-19 doesn't know anything about child support, doesn't know anything about this person needing the same type of help every human being is getting. Okay, last one. In 2018, Alabama received $4 million in incentive funds from the federal government. That's the Title IV-D funding. So Alabama itself in 2018 really robbed the Social Security fund of $4 million because of their $5 to every dollar they collect. So when every expert agrees child support should start out low and gradually increase as the child increases, that doesn't bring you a lot of money to set it at whatever, $100 a month until you reach the age where it increases. The best way it helps these organizations is to set it as high as you can get, because if you just got it at $100 a month, you're only going to get like $500 on your return. But if you put $500 on that child support order, you're going to get $2,500 in return. So we got an evil monster that's eating away at a whole generation of people. A lot of people, this is Parental Alienation Month. A lot of alienation goes on in Alabama courts, and it's ignored. It's not addressed. And these things tear down the child in the end. We don't advocate that you don't take care of your children. We advocate that you made them in private, you take care of them in private. So goes back to my question. He don't have to address the child support part of it. Mr. Neighbors, what do you feel about these stimulus checks being garnished and taken because of a debt? And does the debt outweigh the effects of the COVID-19 virus?
Well, the stimulus checks, the premise behind the stimulus checks is that working people will go through an economic hardship, and they will not be able to purchase those products they need to survive until they can go back to work. That is the intent of those funds, and that is how those funds should be used. Those funds are not should not be used to be attached for some previous debt. Those funds are not allocated to pay debt. They are allocated so that person, that family, that can survive and get back to work. And what also makes this more difficult when that does occur, these courts are closed, and so the person, they just doesn't have a recourse to...
Right, to dispute the debt.
To redress of that crime.
Right. That's what's really scary about all this, and we really need to think. If the stimulus checks, if somebody doesn't deserve the stimulus check because they owe back child support, and that is the law, then the money has to be collected if that's what's on the books, regardless of compassion, regardless of the COVID affecting you, whether you owe or not. If that has to happen, then they should not get that 5-to-1 matching funding coming out of Social Security. They're robbing it. That seems like some kind of backdoor pass-through funding. The federal government already gives them $5 to every dollar they collect. So the federal government is going to write a check to a person who owes child support, knowing that that is going to be taken by the child support agency, and then the federal government is going to turn back around and write them a check for $5 from the money they just collected. What's going on? And nobody's talking about this. If they're going to collect it, let them collect it. But they should not be rewarded at the expense of Social Security Title IV-D funds for collecting money that they already know that's coming. The government can just hold that money. Don't send it to anybody. Keep it. Don't send it to the person that owe. And if you have to, send it to the agency, the child support agency. Don't give them 5-to-1 for collecting the same money you just gave them. That's real slick. But once again, Rick, what is the most important thing that you want the people of District 4 to realize about the importance of this race and how you fit in meeting that challenge?
I am a believer of our founders and why, and I believe we, the people, can govern ourselves. I believe that we are a government of the people. We have become currently a government of corporations, but we can change that. And we change that by electing different people. And I would say this, Marcus, not only on my race, but in your local races, your city council, your board of education, your county commissioners, because that is where your government really is, and that is where your views get represented.
Right.
If you elect your people at your local level, then you will elect the people in Montgomery, and then you elect the people for Washington. This our government is not about people in Montgomery or people in Washington. Our government is about people you elect in your neighborhoods. So when we come up on this next election, you make sure that you've got a challenge in every position in every seat. And then that is how we move the 4th Congressional District forward. That's how you move your neighborhood forward, your county
right.
forward, your district forward, your state, and the nation.
That is great advice. I know that I know you got some things you got to do. You got to go. Wish we could have you all day. But I know with this virus on the rampage, and what are you just going to wait till this all over? Do you have anything scheduled for later on next month or anything? What's going to be? You got any ideas about your first event when we come out of this situation? I mean, are you going to still practice the social distancing once? And if Governor Ivey lifts everything?
Marcus, I'm going to take the advice of CDC, and as soon as Lisa gets something on my schedule, then I will be following that schedule. We are using technology. We're using the phones. We're using Zoom.
You're welcome to come back on this show as well.
Pardon me, sir?
I said you're welcome to come back on this show as well, but I always invite any politician. It doesn't matter what party. Just have your facts together when you come here. But, yes, I look forward to you having some events coming up. I would really like to attend one.
I would like to attend one with you. Tomorrow I will be delivering masks. I will have my mask on. Yes, I will be out delivering masks tomorrow.
Come deliver some over in Lawrence County, Alabama, in Moulton. My sister has a soup kitchen every Tuesday and Thursday, but we've been doing once a week here lately, and just people drive up, and we're talking and trying to do some with masks. We wish we give them hot food and cold food as they come through. We wish we had a mask to give every car too when we come through. We're working on that currently.
How many masks do you need, Marcus?
Our usual number that we serve in each day we open is about 60.
And you do it on Tuesdays?
We've been doing it on Thursday because of this epidemic. We've been doing it on Thursdays, but we have been open on Tuesday. Tuesday and Thursdays from 11 to 2 o'clock is our regular hours. We've been going once a week since then. We did a Tuesday here recently because there was supposed to be bad weather today.
Right.
Usually we would have done it today, but we was expecting bad weather, so we did it Tuesday.
Give Lisa Ward your address, and we'll bring you a couple boxes.
Okay, and we definitely will make sure the people of Lawrence County and anybody who comes drive up and get that meal. We definitely will give them one, or how many ever, it depends on how many you got. We'll always give as many people in the car like we do plates until everything is
right. Gone.
So I really appreciate that, and I know the people Moulton and Lawrence County will be looking forward to that. And we'll be looking forward to you coming back. You know, when all this is over, come out to the kitchen and check out and see what we do. You know, I got a very passionate sister, my sister LaShondra. You know, I help her with the soup kitchen and food pantry. You know, we've been doing this since college at A&M, raising money for the North Alabama Food Bank. So, yeah, we'd love to have you come out. We've had politicians of both sides come out to the soup kitchen. We're nonpartisan at the soup kitchen, and you're welcome to come and talk about your message and your platform. We're just not going to endorse anybody from there, but all stripes are welcome in the fight to end hunger. Okay, is any anything you would
– fight battle in front of us.
Right, that's true. That's true. And we gotta be in that fight together as well in the fight against the virus, protecting each other against the virus. Is there anything you would like to say to the people? Any closing remarks before we close this show out? We had a great guest on here. I think he answered and listened to all the grassroots questions. So I felt like I did my job. It was only two main questions people wanted me to come at him with, and that was about the voting and about the people who owe back child support being the easiest people to kick in a situation like this that nobody's going to really care about. I mean, what, the deadbeats anyway, right? When people, you know, so we got that out. Maybe some people heard it. Rick heard it, and I'm pretty sure he's concerned. He's probably going to look more into it. We encourage the listeners to look more into it. If you want to learn about how this system is doing so much damage, especially the children are always the ones who get hurt. If you want to learn more about that, you just go to www.thechildsupporthustle.com. You can find us on Facebook, too. We also have a show there on this network every Saturday. And from 5 to 7, we're talking about issues in every state. There's been two child support hustle town halls held in Alabama, one held in Huntsville, Alabama, and the other held in Moulton, Alabama. And we've been doing these town halls across the country. And we've also been instrumental in some legislation being changed and brought forth. So we're really doing this on a global scale. You see, we're about we're over 50,000 strong on Facebook, so check us out on there. You usually can get good advice. We're not lawyers, but it's a group of people like an Alcoholics Anonymous, people coming together who have experienced this same terrible thing. And since this month is Parental Alienation Month, we're seeing a lot of people over there talking about the parental alienation that goes on that's always ignored by the courts, and they're talking about these stimuluses being taken from them, and they're suffering from the same effects of it than anybody else who doesn't owe any money. So get over there and check them out, and hopefully we'll hear back from Rick Neighbors, and we have got to get out. Like I said, get out to vote. If for some reason you cannot vote, please encourage at least three people to come out and vote for Rick Neighbors in this election. Check his platform out. If you straight up and down ticket, you know, because some people, and we got them out there in both parties, so people don't like to mention this, but some people really not even looking at the issues, really. They just know they're a Democrat. They just know they're a Republican. They're going to vote straight ticket. Get out and get somebody, three people that can vote. That's how you can really strike back at the system as you get yourself together and get your voting rights restored. If you want to fight back, all you got to do, if you want to resist, all you got to do is get three new people who have never voted to come out and vote on straight Democratic ticket in November. We wish them the best of luck. And Rick, I'm going to let you close it out, what you want to say to the people, and we hope to catch back up with you real soon. And I'll be in touch with Lisa.
Good deal. Thank you, Marcus. Thank you for having me on. And my name is Rick Neighbors, candidate 4th Congressional District of the great state of Alabama. This election is going to be crucial, in my view, for our democracy, and more importantly, how we're going to live, whether we're going to have food on our table, where you go to work and can learn and create a better world for your children. I do think that is what's at stake. Join me. Join the Neighbors Helping Neighbors campaign by going to neighborsforcongress.com, and let's make a difference. Thank you, Marcus.
Thank you, and it's been great having you, and we hope to have you back.
Grassroots mouthpiece.